What?
So we have come to the 16 exercises which normally explain the way how to meditate on the breath in terms of the four foundations of mindfulness. And the four foundations of mindfulness, no matter how we explain the Buddhist meditation, they are the base for the Buddhist meditation. Now, the difference between the northern tradition, which emphasizes the path of bodhisattva, and the southern tradition, which emphasizes the path of the arahat, they are complementary if one believes in what the asanga and the teachers of Mahayana have to say. One can turn from the one into another. Depends on one's previous samskaras. So it does not mean that when one practices the path of bodhisattva, he cannot turn to the path of arahat, and when one practices the path of arahat, he cannot turn to the path of bodhisattva. This is generally aligned like this in the Theravada Abhidharma, but this is not accepted by the teachers of the bodhisattva path. Anyway, the path of the disciple is based on the differentiating wisdom. But everybody who studies Buddhism agrees that in order to get liberation, we need the non-differentiating wisdom. The differentiating wisdom cannot bring us to the penetration of the ultimate reality. But the northern tradition emphasizes with familiarity with of the non-differentiating wisdom, you can actually experience very, very clearly on the base of logic, on the base of hearing, on the base of the wisdom from contemplation, you can understand very, very clearly, without any doubt, the real state of things. And the real state of things after enlightenment, of course, is the non-reality, rather the dreamlike reality of what we actually experiencing in the world. One does not grasp for the world, for the self anymore. There is no world without the self. There is no self without the world. This is very important to understand. Now, the entrance into the meditation on the breath we have seen. The first step is ganana, which means the counting of the breath. And the counting of the breath explains the mindfulness of the breath. That's why this meditation is called the Anapanasati, the mindfulness of in-breath and out-breath. So the counting means to be mindful of in-breath and out-breath. This is the meaning of counting. When you are actually meditating, so you are counting, because you are mindful of in-breath and out-breath. This counting is explained, like in Visuddhimagga, is like the scaffolding which you need to build a house. When you have a house, then you would be stupid to hold to the scaffolding. You, of course, remove it. You don't need it anymore. Similarly, you do the counting as long as you need it, even when you are advanced meditator, sometimes your mind is running here, running there, especially if you're busy in the daily world. Then you do for some time counting when you need it, and discard the counting when you don't need it anymore. Now, this text is very particular because this counting is also related to the understanding of what the Visuddhimagga calls the jñāta pariññā, the knowledge, the thorough knowledge of the objects of wisdom. And here we are dealing with the section of Yogacara Bhumishastra dealing with the practice of the Shravakas. We have explained practice of the Shravaka is completely based on the differentiating wisdom. The differentiating wisdom is the essence of the practice of the disciples. These objects of wisdom, they are here enumerated. And it starts with the five aggregates. We have explained when you understand the five aggregates, you can understand them in the process of counting. It means in the process of mindfulness of in-breath and out-breath. You don't need to take this counting seriously, but when you mindfully breathe in and breathe out, you can recognize the fact that there is nothing in our experience beside these aggregates. When there is touch, you can analyze them one by one. This is what the text does. When you see the aggregate, you see the Dharma, you see the basis for your experience. When you see the basis for your experience, you cannot believe anymore in some God create, some outer force creating our experience here, responsible for what we experience, because it does not make sense anymore. When the five aggregates are the content of our experience, why to bring something from outside? What the truth about our experience has to be found inside, in our body and the mind. That is a true yoga. And when we become familiar, we have explained these five trainings actually are called in Sanskrit the five familiarities. When you are familiar with counting and you are familiar with the five aggregates, that there is nothing except the formations, nothing except the basis, nothing except the dharmas which explain everything in our experience, then you will find sense in what Buddhism precisely teaches, what makes Buddhism Buddhism, the dependent origination. Dependent origination implies that nothing happens without a cause. And actually these dharmas that we experience, these basis that we experience, these formations that we experience, they are the cause and effect. In our experience, nothing really exists in the world except the cause and effect. The nirvana is also result of the cause, but it is not the cause itself, but it is a result of the cause. And this cause is the Eightfold Noble Path, the middle path. And you cannot understand the middle path without understanding the dependent origination. This is what makes Buddhism Buddhism. But in order to penetrate the middle path, you have to understand what is the ultimate reality. Only when ultimate reality is there, then the Eightfold Middle Path, we have explained, come as one unit. All the eight aspects of the Middle Path occur at once. So one can uproot the defilements. And all these eight aspects of the Middle Path will occur only when one becomes familiar with the aggregates, with the dependent origination, and with the four truths. Four noble truths, but actually the northern tradition emphasizes very much it is not the truths which are noble, it is those who have realized them that are noble. When we realize these four noble truths, we become the noble ones. We may know the four noble truths, we may have studied them, we may have reflected on them, but we are not noble as long as we have not realized them in the process of abhisamaya, process of direct seeing. And this abhisamaya has also stages. This is very important to understand. One does not get the complete realization at once, but one will get it stage by stage, by familiarity. That's why these exercises, they are called familiarity. You become arahat by the familiarity with the 16 exercises. But you will never become an arahat by the familiarity of the 16 exercises before being familiar with mindfulness of in-breath and out-breath, being familiar with the aggregates, being familiar with dependent origination, and being familiar with the four truths, which become the four truths of the noble ones when you have realized them. Otherwise they are not noble, because the truth is not noble as long as we have not realized it. And the Buddhists believe that the teachings of the Buddha is the truth, whether there is one who is teaching it or there is no one who is teaching it. It is the fact that we, what we actually experience in the world. No one, not even the Buddha, can change this fact. But all we can do is just to realize this fact. That's why our very wise translator translates these truths as realities or something like that. I've forgotten. Train engaging with reality. It is not exactly in the text, but he is very wisely kind of interpreting it. So these four truths are the reality of the world and of what is beyond the world. The reality of the world is the insatisfactory state in impermanence, and the cause of this insatisfactory state in impermanence, which is our grasping. Grasping means thirst, and due to thirst we are holding. Because we are holding, we keep on suffering. And this is an endless process, and it is the what we actually experience in the world. Whether there is one who teaches it or there is no one who teaches it, it is a fact to be directly seen. Buddha says, it is ehipasiko, come and see. Sanditiko, you have to see it directly by yourself. When you see it directly by yourself, then you understand without distortion the ultimate reality, which is free from suffering. Because it is free from grasping. free from thirst. All this we can understand on the basis of engaging in the mindful observation of the breath. So through this mindful observation of the breath, you can understand and penetrate the objects of wisdom by the differentiating wisdom and get the direct insight into that which is beyond differentiating. Be it emptiness, be it signlessness, be it desirelessness. When you penetrate by differentiating wisdom the objects of wisdom, then your mind will guide you to the object you cannot grasp. An object you cannot grasp is not an object, because what we grasp is an object because we can hang the mind on it. But there is no object you can hang the mind on in Nirvana. So, for understanding that object where you, on which you cannot hang the mind on, you have to be familiar with the five aggregates, and then you can become familiar with the dependent origination. Only when you become familiar with dependent origination, you can get the direct seeing. Because the dependent origination is the cause and effect moment by moment, every moment. They cannot be separated. And this is how the world works. And in order that it works like this, there cannot be a self-existent entity whatsoever. So let us see the training of from how we get familiarity with the dependent origination on the base of the breath. So the meditator has to investigate, has to experience by himself what the text calls the basis, and basis here means vastu, what we can actually base ourselves on, like the eye is the vastu, the base for seeing, ears is a base for hearing, and so on. The base in this sense. And what is the cooperative condition? He is using his own words. When I have to look into Chinese, it means simply pratyaya, the condition. Everything that happens has a hetu, has a primary cause, and many, many conditions. They are actually often synonyms, but sometimes in Abhidhamma they specialists in differentiating very minutely. So the hetu is the primary cause, and pratyaya are the what he calls cooperative conditions, the secondary, many, many, many causes. So this breath has the basis, that is body and the mind, we have learned, and it has many, many, many other conditions related to these primary causes or primary basis. As the text explains in the first part, you cannot have breath only with the body, you cannot have breath only with the mind. But you can only have breath when the body and mind are bases together. This is very important to understand. And in this sense, in Buddhism, the base is the body and the mind. You will find in Hindu philosophy the same idea. The world is just nama rupa. only the explanation is different. But in Samkhya, in Vedanta, and so on, everything is just some in the world, nama rupa. And nama rupa is always changing. And rupa by itself means process of change, process of being broken. Rupati iti rupa. And the mind means nama, that means mind the king and the mental factors which make the content of the mind. That is what bends. Namati means to bend in Sanskrit. So the mind is that which bends to the process of dissolution. Literally in Abhidharma. The mind itself is a dissolution because it's always changing and it bends to the process of dissolution, the process which is always changing. So there is nothing to grasp except the concept of this process. And this what one understands by studying in depth the dependent origination. The breath itself is a wonderful object of meditation because you, the breath is a movement itself, and you want to grasp the movement, you will be frustrated. So when one investigates with wisdom, it has to be added. Investigates with wisdom, one will see that this complex of mind and body, the complex of the five aggregates, depends on what? Depends on life faculty. This is a very wonderful term in Buddhism, life faculty. Jivitendriya. This life faculty is a very interesting term. I am not so familiar, but I think it is a particularly a Buddhist term. In the Theravada tradition, Abhidharma, it is we have two kinds of jivitendriya. We have the nama jivitendriya and the rupa jivitendriya. We have the life faculty of the form and life faculty of the mind. And according to Theravada, life faculty of the mind has to be with each and every mind process. It cannot be separated from any mind process. So it is sabbacitta sadharana. It is present in each and every moment of the moving mind. It has to be there. The mind cannot move without the life faculty. When we die, so the scriptures explain, so the worms and the mind faculty goes out of the body and we become same like the wood or same like stones and so on. From earth we come, to earth we go, says the Bible. So the same idea. But you don't need the concept of a soul to give a meaning to it. Anyway, so now to be familiar with the how we work, we have to get the idea of the jivitendriya, what keeps us alive. It is explained in Abhidhamma, it is that which protects the life, like the nurse keeping the baby to the breast and giving it a suck. So this mind faculty keeps us, our body and mind, to working together, protects us. So it is a very interesting concept. in old India, the Brahmanas, they believe that the plants also have the life faculty, that the plants, trees, everything is alive. Also, we are here in the Taos, that is a belief of the Indians. Everything has the life faculty. So they worship the trees and so on. But in Theravada they differentiate the mind life faculty and the rupa life faculty. To damage the life means actually only to damage the mind faculty, not to damage the faculty of the rupa. Yet the Buddha has coined the rule that a monk should not harm any plant. In the Vinaya it is still kept in the Theravada countries. Because the elite of India, they believed that this is also killing when you harm the plant. But it does not make sense from the point of view of Abhidharma, because it is not the mind. Only the mind faculty supports the mind to differentiate between good and evil, but the faculty of the form cannot differentiate between good and evil. So it does not make any sense, but the Buddha made this rule because this Vinaya is not according to the reality of the Dharma, but according to the thinking of the people. We have explained. The Buddha says, I don't argue with the world. What the wise men in the world consider to be good, I also consider to be good. What they consider to be bad, I also consider to be bad. So Buddha makes always concession to what the people think, so as to make the Dharma respectable. But it becomes a dogma if one makes it, interprets it without the wisdom of Abhidharma, wisdom of Dharma, which is explains how actually the things are in fact. But never mind, this is just going a little apart. But this life faculty we can interpret in many different ways. Why I'm saying in Northern Buddhism it is not interpreted as like this, it is interpreted as the citta viprayukta samskara, as the special category, as the formations not connected with the mind. So it is a different interpretation, and it makes it very interesting to study Buddhism, see how you can interpret the same thing from many different aspects. These so-called citta viprayukta samskaras, the formations not connected with the mind, is a peculiarity of the Northern tradition. Some take them very seriously. Also, like impermanence, how to classify it. It's also the formation not connected with the mind. And without it, you cannot explain Buddhism. You need to explain it, but it is neither form nor the mind. So how to explain? So make a new category. Buddhism can be very flexible. Depends on how we interpret it, but explaining the same thing. So when you understand that there has to be some energy, life energy, or prana, life faculty is a similar concept to prana, which supports the life, which is a base for the life, then you can investigate what is the base for this, what is the cause of this. And this is especially Buddhists, the cause of this is the will formations in the past life. In the past life, in order to understand the dependent origination, you have to see, actually, strictly speaking, three lives. It happens in terms of the three lives. It's same in the Southern tradition, same in Northern tradition. In the past life, we had ignorance, and due to ignorance, we produced the will formations. Collecting the will formations means karma. The collection of, because we collect the will formation, we create the karma, and according to the karma, we will be blown from one life into another life. By what? By consciousness. You don't need something exterior for explaining this process. So our present life that we protect so much is actually based on the accumulation of the will formations in the previous life, and this we did on the base of ignorance. So this is how you investigate on the base of breath. The breath is also the formation. Everything we experience is a formation. And these formations, they are basically caused by what? By the consciousness, which is also formation. Due to this consciousness, which is also a formation, you have the nama-rupa, you have the subject and object, you have the form and the mind which bends to the form. Then you have the six bases which are accumulating in the womb of the mother. Then due to that you have the touch, that's our world based on touch. Then you have the sensation. If you have the sensation, you differentiate between the pleasant and unpleasant, between the evil and the good, and so on. And you stick to this because of this, again, of these will formations which come with clinging and create the new karma. So it's turning around. Buddhism is the symbolized by the wheel. This is the wheel of Dharma. Whether there is a Buddha explaining it or no Buddha explaining it, it's turning and turning and turning. Only we have to have the insight to understand it. So this is how life works. Then from ignorance, if we going to continue, because the aim of the path of the disciple is to finish as soon as possible the state, unsatisfactory state of impermanence, go into nirvana, which is beyond this unsatisfactory state, which is neither this nor that, which is beyond thinking. One has to realize it by itself. So, what to do? Get the deep understanding. However you explain in the Bodhisattva path, it's explained in a different way. But in the Shravaka path, these will formations, they always have the negative taste. Not in the Bodhisattva path. But in this Shravaka path, based on differentiating consciousness, always the negative pain. So, due to this creating these formations, we are suffering, and suffering is to be avoiding. We are accumulation of suffering is the karma, and the karma, as long as we are motivated by the karma, we are bound to suffer. This is the basic concept. Without this understanding, this basic concept, no Buddhism can exist. It is very important to understand, but you can interpret it also in a different way, and it is done. Now we get some grasp of the dependent origination, we get some grasp of the cause of suffering, cause of this world which is suffering because it is always impermanent, that is accumulation of the formations. So we can penetrate the Four Noble Truths. That means we can penetrate the truths of the world and the truths of that is beyond the world. So ultimately there are only two truths, the truth of the world, which is the conventional truth, and the truth beyond the world, which is the truth of the cessation, cessation of the world. Cessation of the world does not mean that the Arahat, when he becomes enlightened, the world does not exist. Of course the world exists, but it is experienced in a very, very different way. That means the sensation becomes non-sensation, the attention becomes non-attention. Why? Because it does not have the taste of accumulation. So this is a whole world of difference. If you want to become a bodhisattva, you have to penetrate this truth, but you do not identify with it. So you can continue accumulating the perfections until the state of perfection, which is the Dharmakaya. That is the ideal of the bodhisattva. Okay, so we come to the training or familiarity, in other words, with the Four Noble Truths, which brings you to the direct vision of not distorted by any wrong concepts. And that is the truth of cessation, truth of nirvana. Cessation here means cessation of the state of non-satisfactory state. And this non-satisfactory state can be brought only to sensation by the Eightfold Noble Path, by the middle path, not holding to any extremes. It has very simple explanation and it has very deep explanation. Then you will find in Buddhism many different schools, many different interpretations of the middle path. So that makes it so interesting. But all these explanations, they should not be a dogma. They are skillful means to make us understand how actually what is our experience about. So you have interpretation of dependent origination based on karma. This is a base for all interpretations. You have interpretation of dependent origination based on this alaya consciousness, the base consciousness, which contains all the seeds of our what we experience inside and outside. Then you have the interpretation of the dependent origination based on the so-called true consciousness, which is not subjected to arising and cessation. So different origination, different ways of interpreting, but all make sense when they based on this basic concept. This basic concept is very important. We cannot jump over it. So let's come to the Four Noble Truths. One who is thoroughly trained, that means familiar with dependent origination, he needs then to practice familiarity with the Four Noble Truths. They bring him to the direct experience of the ultimate reality, which is called Abhisamaya. According to the scholars, we have three yanas, three ways of getting the Abhisamaya. For the disciples, it is based on the Four Noble Truths. For the Buddhas, for themselves, it is based on the deeper investigation of the dependent origination. And for the Buddha, it is based on, for the perfectly realized Buddha, it is based on the penetration of the Dharmakaya. This is supposed to be the highest idea, to become the Dharmakaya, not to become just Nirvana, which is opposed to Nirvana, but become the Dharmakaya, which is not opposed to anything. This is a non-dualistic approach. So one who is familiar with dependent origination can practice familiarity with dependently related events. Actually, in Chinese it says dependently related all events, because everything is interconnected. This is very important. In the Northern tradition, always emphasized, all is interconnected. This is the wonder of the world, which is specially explored in the Chinese Huayan tradition or the Tantric tradition. They are impermanent. Since they are impermanent, they occur upon not having occurred previously, and upon, in Chinese it says, before they were not there, and now they are there. As soon as they are there, they disperse. This is our experience in the world. It was not there before, but it appears now, and as soon as it appears now, it disperses immediately. This experience you have to make in meditation, and for that you need to penetrate these 16 aspects of meditation on the breath, especially the meditation on the dharmas, the Dhamma Anupassana, which implies all of our experience, because all of our experience is actually these objects of wisdom that are explained here. And that you can only understand by Dhamma Anupassana. We will go through it and see it clearly. So because of this condition, this is the very nature of the world, so it is explained in Chinese. So we are always, as long as we are in this process of impermanence, we are always subjected to birth, aging, sickness and death. This is what is the samsara about. Samsara means we are always expanding and shrinking, expanding, shrinking. That's the life, starting from the plants to the higher forms of life, expanding, developing, and coming to the emptiness again. Developing from emptiness, coming back to emptiness. So all this shows, this is very important, that all these formations, that what we are, they are without an owner, without atta. So we are not free, we, as Anatta Lakhana Sutta explains, we cannot choose what form we are born. We cannot choose, let me be like this, not like that. Let me react like this, react like this. We are formed by these formations. And these formations, they have not owner, because they, in them you will not find anything that is self-existent. They exist only in a relation to each other. So this is the meaning of being without an owner. Thus, by means of impermanence, unsatisfying, empty and identityless properties, we have explained in Northern tradition, all the samskaras, they have these four aspects. They have the aspect of anicca, of dukkha, of sunya, and of anatta. In the Theravada tradition, you don't have the sunya, but you have instead the impure. But the impure is just aspect of unsatisfying, that's all. So actually it boils to three: impermanent, unsatisfactory, and identityless. Identityless is a good word. The translator is very skillful. Is it maybe better than selfless, no? One engages with the reality of suffering. This is a base. According to Gavampati Sutta and so on, Gavampati says, I have heard from the master himself that when one penetrates the truth of unsatisfactoriness, of dukkha, one will also, the other truths are implied. So the truth of dukkha is a base for all the other truths. First we have to penetrate the dukkha, which is not so easy, because dukkha is explained as suffering. Nobody wants suffering. So if we explain I exist, nobody will be interested in Buddhism. It is not suffering. It is a state which brings no satisfaction. As we have explained, Sanskrit is a wonderful language. Dukkha means, ka means the sky. Dukkha means, du means bad. So when we are in impermanence, we are living under the bad sky. Bad choice. What to do? So, and the real sukha, then the ultimate, what is nirvana? It's explained as ultimate sukha. No more dukkha is the ultimate sukha. The other sukha, just pleasant sensation, is not the ultimate sukha, of course. Only nirvana is the ultimate sukha. So dukkha does not mean suffering or pain. It implies, but only by sight. The real dukkha is the formations. Then we have dukkha of change. When we cling to pleasant sensation, it will be dukkha when it changes. And then you have dukkha. When somebody kick us, it will be very painful. It's also dukkha. But they are not the real dukkha. The real dukkha is the formations. And all we experience in the world are just formations. This is important to understand. When we can understand it, we can penetrate the Four Noble Truths. Because when one sees the as Gavampati says, Arahat Gavampati, when one sees the dukkha, one sees the cause of dukkha, one sees the end of dukkha, and one sees the middle path which leads to the end of dukkha. So when dukkha is realized, we also realize that this holding to the formations does not make any sense. It is not logical at all. Northern Buddhism especially emphasizes logic. Holding to emptiness does not make any sense whatsoever, but we still hold to emptiness. Like the ticks, no? You call it, these small animals. Like the ticks, they never leave the body unless you extract them by force. But you can also extract them by very gentle means. And only that will really work without bad consequences. So this, when we understand it, then we will see this end of unsatisfactory state as Shanta Pranita, the translates tranquil and excellent. It is peaceful and superior. This state of cessation is peaceful and superior to the state of being produced again and again and again and again due to holding. So if one dwells thus repeatedly, there will be complete eradication of craving. Thus one engages with the reality of the source. He translates samudaya as a source. Samudaya means origination, also source, but source is more, is an unusual translation. It's also translated as accumulation, as origination. Many different words you can use for samudaya. So anyway, it is origin, truth of origination, truth of accumulation, truth of source, whatever you call it, should be clear. This unsatisfactory state has its source, has its origination in accumulating the will formations, which is karma. Then, when we penetrate it, then we penetrate the cessation, and we penetrate the truth of the middle path. So, if one becomes familiar with this, then the mind will open for a new dimension. And this new dimension is non-created. It is there, but it is must be always there. That's why Northern Buddhism speaks of Prakriti Nirvana, a natural Nirvana. It is a natural state, but it becomes a natural state only when we see it. If we don't see it, it is not a natural state. This is very important to understand. And when one sees it, then this world does not seem to be so real. This is why it's so important to realize it, so that we can function better in this world. It is not only to go beyond the world, it is to function better in the world by not holding to it so much. And we have got this objects of wisdom which will enable us, when we penetrate them, to have the direct realization of that which is beyond the world. And that is the path of seeing. We have said we need, in order to realize Buddhism, we need to go through five kinds of path. The path of accumulation of merit, this is a base. Unless we have accumulation of merit, we will not strive. Then the path of striving, that is being more and more aware of what the reality of our experience is. Then it will bring us to the direct experience of that which is beyond the unsatisfactory state. That is a path of seeing. When we see it, then this world will not be so real, so we will eradicate the base for our defilements, which is the seeing of the core, permanent core in the five aggregates. The self, self means permanence, in Indian philosophy at least. Or identity means permanence. And when you realize this, the falseness of satkaya, tashti, of being of the core in the five aggregates, you will not hold to the empty rituals as being the karma, according to Veda, being the only way to heaven. And you will also eradicate the wrong view that there is that which is impermanent, can be permanent, that which is unsatisfactory can bring the full satisfaction, that which is non-self is a self. And that which is empty of self-existing nature can have a self-existent nature. So this much for today, and now what remains are these 16 exercises. We will go through them. When we have penetrated these objects of wisdom, we see the reality beyond unsatisfactory state, and we will still have defilements, but these defilements will have a real base. As long as we have not destroyed this idea of the identity, lasting identity in the five aggregates, he's using very wonderful word, I like it. Then one will have long-lasting defilements. When one has seen the non-identity in the five aggregates, then defilements will be there, but they will not last long. So the life in the world will be much better. So it's worthwhile to experience it. Okay, that much for today. And we will still have in the evening, and we just continue the 16 exercises today and tomorrow. And I hope we get some clarity how to bring more understanding to our training. Thank you. So we make a 15 minutes break and do as usual.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.